In Georgia, courts have dismissed indictments against people accused of violent crimes, including tossing out murder charges against two men accused of shooting and killing a man in Fulton County in 2005. Then there's the family law attorney in San Francisco now advising her wealthier clients to settle divorce and custody disputes outside of backlog courts. In New York, judges have been ordered to begin wrapping up court proceedings at 4:30 to cut overtime pay. Budget cuts. They're hitting the country's courtrooms as judicial appointments at all levels of government are being held up by partisan politics. Most states have cut court funding overall by as much as 15%. 26 states have stopped filling judicial vacancies. 34 have stopped replacing clerks. 31 have cut or frozen salaries of judges and staff. 16 have furloughed clerical staff. 9 have furloughed judges. 14 states have reduced hours or are closed on some workdays. The result, a legal system in crisis, according to a recent report by the American Bar Association. So let's spend some time there today. Joining us from the NPR studios in New York, the ABA's president, Bill Robinson. Bill, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Also joining us and sitting next to Bill in New York, Judith Kay, an attorney at the law firm of Skadden Arps in Manhattan, and also for 25 years a judge on the New York Court of Appeals. For 15 of those, she was the court's chief justice and its executive officer. Judge Kay, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Bill, let's first start with you. Throwing out murder charges, that sounds unbelievable, but the Wall Street Journal reports the charges against two men were thrown out because Fulton County in Georgia took 4 years to indict them, and authorities blame that delay on strained resources. Is that an outlier, throwing out murder charges, or is that something you're hearing?
Everything about this issue is shocking and surprising. Just to talk about the state of Georgia, that state currently only allocates 0.78% of its overall state budgets to the judiciary. And that includes the entire prosecutorial system in Georgia.
But it would seem that this is setting a precedent, because now we're reading about Khan Din Pan. He's another death penalty defendant in Georgia. He's accused of killing a man and the man's 2-year-old son over a gambling debt. And he's now saying he's been waiting for his trial since March of 2005. So he wants Georgia to dismiss all charges against him for violations of his right to a speedy trial. Once you start doing this, doesn't this set precedent?
It not only sets precedent, but it also reminds all of us that there are statutes that must be obeyed. And those statutes call for a speedy trial and a speedy trial within certain time parameters. The courts must apply the law that the legislatures adopt, and this is just a painful example of that.
So, Judge Kay, this is not just justice delayed for the accused, but it's potentially justice denied for their victims. I mean, there's another story in the Wall Street Journal about a family. There was contaminated paint in a home, lead-contaminated paint. It had a toxic effect on their daughter. They filed in 2001. 10 years later, the case hasn't been heard. So there's all different forms of justice, and some is monetary.
Courts, the principal expense is personnel. Probably more than 90% of the state court budget goes to personnel. That's where we've been suffering on the court side. On the public side, where you have fewer staff people to keep the courts going, you have to impose requirements like absolutely no overtime, meaning you better start closing up your briefcases, because by 5 o'clock, we just can't go on.
Let me expand that just a little bit, if I may. In New Hampshire, in the last couple of years, Chief Justice Broderick, because of budgetary reasons, was required to close the courts of New Hampshire for an entire year for civil jury trials.
Wait a minute. Close the courts for an entire year? What kind of cases are in a civil jury trial that they apparently went without for a year?
We're talking about litigation involving small business, torts, cases for injury, claims involving product liability. It's unthinkable, but it happened in New Hampshire. In fact, there are 6 courts systems in this country today, state court systems, that are closed one day a week. They're only open 4 days a week. In 2010, 40 out of 50 state court systems received budget cuts. And this has continued.
Well, I'm looking at California. Court funding there slashed by $350 million. Kathleen Feinstein, who's the daughter of the state senator, Dianne Feinstein, but also presiding judge of the San Francisco Superior Court, said it was an emergency loan that kept that system afloat. They had to take out a loan.
But even in keeping it alive, as you just described it so well, we're talking about the San Francisco courts were in the face of this $350 million cut to California courts in the last 18 months. Even with that infusion of some additional money, just in the last month, 23 courtrooms in the San Francisco area have been closed, and 40% of the court personnel have been let go. So imagine what that does to access to justice in that area of the country.
You know, you started with the truly horrendous example of the murder case, and I just want to chip in with something that touches my heart very, very deeply. We worked awfully hard in the state of New York to open children's centers in many of our courts. Now, children's centers are there so that people who can't afford child care but have to be in court on a matter have a place to leave their kids, and we succeeded in opening them with very hard work across the state. Last year, we saw more than 55,000 children in those centers, connected them to Head Start, to food and shelter programs. The budgets have been slashed in half for those children's centers. These are the families who are coming into family court, to housing court, with the kind of life problems of eviction and foreclosure, and maybe you might say the other polar extreme, in the sense that it'll never be the front page headline that the children's centers have had their budgets slashed in half and we now have to close them and cut many of them. But doesn't this tell you how pervasive and painful these cuts are?
Judge Kaye, we hear your concern about that one side effect. In prison systems, what does it cost, Bill, when cases are delayed and people sit in jail?
Well, we're told that to keep a prisoner in jail for a year now, across the country, and we're talking a national average in this instance, the expense per prisoner is over $23,000 a year. That seems a little conservative to me, but that's the number that we're told. Multiply that across the country to the number of persons who are incarcerated without ever having been convicted, who are in prejudgment incarceration, and the numbers become dramatically significant. These are dollars that could be spent on the court system, but in fact are being spent on prejudgment incarceration because matters can't get to court, as you were referencing earlier. And so the system bogs down even further in its capacity to deliver justice where justice is needed.
Well, here are some other examples from the American Bar Association report on budget cuts in criminal cases. In Alabama, recent layoffs of judicial staff have led to an indefinite delay in the high-profile murder case of Gabe Watson. He's the man accused of killing his bride while scuba diving in Australia. Tommy Nail, the state's chief justice, says something has to get done. We can't have a civilized society without the court system. In Washington state, a suspect in a violent case was released as a result of those speedy trial violations, only to allegedly rape a woman and then kill a pedestrian in an ensuing high-speed chase with police. In Ohio, this is incredible, a municipal court says it can no longer accept new cases because it has run out of paper. And Judith, Judge Kaye, before the break, you mentioned the closed children's centers in courtrooms. Now, these were places for kids at the center of cases in New York. This hasn't been in the news, and we're wondering, yes, big corporations also are waiting to get into courts, but maybe this all isn't top of mind because people who often end up needing court services are the poor or abused children. Is there a class question here about who cares about courts?
Robin, I think you've really put your finger on something important. First of all, these people, they not only don't have money and status, but they have no vote. So they do tend to sink to the bottom of everybody's list. 750,000 new family court filings last year in the state of New York. Mm. So those are just a few of the answers to your question about why we don't hit the headlines so that people can appreciate how important this is.
I'm thinking, too, Judge Kaye, of we're in a housing crisis right now, and I'm imagining that, you know, these courts can't handle all the different foreclosure and housing cases that might be coming before them.
Yes, Robin, and you've put your finger on another large part of the problem, which is as the economic crisis grows, more and more people are in court. You know, the filings go up, not down, when there are problems throughout our economy, from those most vulnerable to those with the most complicated issues. So we see rising dockets. closing courts, delayed proceedings. That's why Bill and I are, and the American Bar Association are calling this a crisis, and I think rightly so.
In the history of the world, Robin, ours is a unique constitutional democracy. Our system of checks and balances is the key to constitutional freedom. And to the extent that that's compromised, then we're all in danger.
Well, in fact, you say that the whole country exists on this theory of three branches of government, executive, legislative, and judicial. And, you know, now there's not an equal pull between the three, with the court system fraying, as you describe it. But let me just play devil's advocate for a second. And, you know, again, you're with the American Bar Association. Lawyers aren't very popular until someone needs one, as you know. And speak to the person who might be thinking, well, wait a minute, lawyers are part of the problem here. They've driven up a lot of the court costs. And this is, you know, just a self-serving attempt to ensure that more lawyers get work and courts run smoothly so that they can work. How would you respond to someone who doesn't have a lot of sympathy for lawyers?
I would respond by pointing out, first of all, that our polling consistently shows that the public at large has a very high opinion of their own lawyer. And we're doing this as volunteers, as professionals, to get across the reality that justice delayed is justice denied, and it is the public whose interests are at stake. We simply need to keep a focus on the message, not on the politics of personalities or professions or vested interests, but keep a focus where it belongs, our shared freedom in this country, which is directly attributable to the quality of our judiciary, and our judiciary needs to be adequately funded in order to do its job.
And just to continue off the lofty peak where Bill is, let me give you a couple of examples to answer your question about lawyers just needing to make more money. I've given you one, which is the children's centers. Those people are not in court with their lawyers earning large fees. They're probably not earning any fees. They're pro bono. Evening sessions in our small claims court have been slashed. Those are not people who are paying lawyers either. Those are your everyday citizens in to recover on a little debt or some small matter where they have to work in the daytime, and we used to offer them the option of evening sessions. Our alternative dispute resolution programs have been slashed. These, again, are ways for people who can't afford lawyers and don't have money. These are ways for them to get their critical life matters resolved. So I think that's really a very unfair criticism, and that this is just about lawyers. I think it's just about people and justice.
And Bill Robinson, what does the ABA propose? I mean, short of lobbying for funds to be released from these cash-strapped states, what do you propose?
What we propose is that legislators recognize the importance of the courts in our system of justice and that they more adequately fund our courts. This becomes, as you suggested, that in tough economic times, it's even more important to do so because the demands on the courts is that much more intense as financial pressures create more controversy, whether it's mortgage, whether it's enforcement of contracts, whether it's collections, whether it's defending against rent problems, whatever it might be. So to treat the courts as another road or a park or a line item is to abandon the legislator's constitutional responsibility. Remember that when this country was created and our Constitution was written, our initial government didn't even have the money to pay the revolutionary soldiers, didn't have the money to pay for roads, but they set up our courts because of the importance of our courts in the fabric of our constitutional democracy. It's just that essential. It was in the beginning, and it is today.
That's Bill Robinson, president of the American Bar Association. We've also been speaking with Judith Kay, an attorney at the law firm of Skadden Arps in New York and a former chief justice of the New York Court of Appeals. To see the ABA's report on crisis in the courts, go to hearandnow.org. Bill, Judge Kay, thanks both of you for your time.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you.